As with many disease processes, the ability to detect and diagnose them early on can dramatically reduce complications, treatment costs, and morbidity. At the International Association for Dental Research, the IADR, conference in Toronto in early July, a new device was presented that can detect the early onset of tooth decay without the need for dental x-rays. And I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Stephen Abrams. He's a dental clinician, an author of 90 papers in practice for 29 years, chief executive officer of Quantum Dental Technologies. His main interests are in cariology or tooth decay, and also is the head of the task force of the Ontario Dental Association looking at access to care in local communities. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to start off with, for our listeners, to give them an idea of what the pathophysiology is of tooth decay and its principal causes. What leads to the breakdown of the enamel in teeth?
Well, it's really interesting. Tooth decay, its definitions have shifted over the 29 years that I've been in practice. And the classic definition now, which was established by the National Institute of Health in 2001, is that tooth decay is an infectious disease. It's a process that has periods of breakdown or demineralization and periods of remineralization, and there are a number of bacteria that cause tooth decay. So those are really the keys in that particular definition. So what makes it different than 29 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
29 years ago, we looked at tooth decay as something caused by bacteria, created a hole in a tooth, and I put in a filling. Here the words infectious disease come in, and the words talk about reversal and demineralization and remineralization. So the pathophysiology, or the disease process, is the following. Teeth inhabit the mouth, and they sit in this environment that's filled with bacteria, filled with carbohydrates and food debris, and their teeth will, after they've been cleaned, will be covered with a small protein coat, and onto that come the bacteria. And the bacteria exist in this community or a biofilm, and there are clumps of bacterial colonies. And as the bacteria is allowed to build up on the teeth, this biofilm changes in nature. The original colonizers are Strep mutans and Lactobacilli, which are the two classic bacteria found in tooth decay, and they inhabit this space to begin with. And what they do is they pick up free-floating carbohydrates, sugars, and they use them to live. And part of their metabolic or living process is that they produce acids, and the acids produced by those bacteria break down the enamel crystal. And when the biofilm is cleaned away and fluorides or calcium and free-floating phosphate are found in saliva, those areas of crystal that have broken down will remineralize.
Hmm.
So there's the components of infectious disease, demineralization, and remineralization that are now in this new definition of tooth decay.
Now, I want to get to treatment a little later because the implication is if you have a definition of tooth decay as infectious disease, it obviously implies prevention of the infection or at least minimizing the effects of the infection.
That's right.
But I wanted to get, before treatment, there's usually diagnosis and clinical examination.
Yep.
So to date, what are the techniques used to diagnose tooth decay?
The classic techniques for diagnosing tooth decay are visual examination, x-rays, and also to gently probe the lesion. But these things are changing.
Mm-hmm.
Visual examination with a clean tooth surface so that all the biofilm and plaque and the like has been removed allows you to look at the enamel itself. And enamel is a crystal and allows you to see what the color is of that crystal, if there are any white spots or brown spots. And by gently touching those areas, not poking at them, you can see how hard or how soft they are. One has to be careful because some of those softer areas of the enamel shell can remineralize if given the right
mm-hmm.
environment. X-rays allow you to take a look at what goes on in between the teeth, so where the two teeth touch each other. And there, they're very sensitive, but only after you've lost about 40 to 60% of
mm-hmm.
the mineral content. So you need to have a pretty large size lesion, one that's a quarter to halfway through the enamel shell, before it's actually visible on a dental X-ray. X-rays aren't really good for looking at the biting surfaces of back teeth. There you have very deep grooves, and they aren't able to be imaged
mm-hmm.
on an X-ray. So there you rely upon your eyes or visual examination, dry field, and using a probe, but lightly, not strongly, touching those areas to see if those grooves are solid or if they're soft. If you poke at them vigorously, you can take oral bacteria and jam them down into the grooves. Right? You can also actually break up the enamel crystals that surround that little groove or fissure as well, too, causing further breakdown. So those are the classic ways of diagnosing it.
So it seems that this aspect of evaluation is more on a macro level, that
That's
you really
right.
can't see very early changes. If we're dealing, again, as you mentioned, pathophysiology being an infectious disease process, you are dealing with at initially microscopic level of bacteria producing acid,
mm-hmm.
molecules breaking down the enamel, demineralizing the enamel, and yet you can't see that right away. And then you, as you mentioned, you need 40% degradation before you can really pick this up to any significant degree. So how... what is the base? This turns me to the new diagnostic tool and the basic science that led to the development of this particular diagnostic tool, given the parameters and the restrictions of the standard of literally standard of diagnostic care to date.
Well, the phenomena is really very simple. If one shines a laser light on any sort of surface, and this didn't come, the tool itself didn't come from dentistry. Actually, Dr. Andreas Mendelis is an expert in photothermal effects, was using this particular technique for imaging defects in steel rails, brake casings, and computer chips, or silicone wafers. But the phenomenon is very easy to explain, hopefully. If one shines any sort of light or laser light on a tooth, if the crystal is nice and healthy, the light just shines through that crystal and scatters all over the place. If there's a defect in the middle of that crystal, the light, which is really energy, will drive through the enamel of the tooth. It'll pick up that defect, and it'll radiate the light back in two forms, as a little bit different glow and as a piece of heat. If you've got the right detectors, you can pick up those changes. Now, it's not a lot of heat, so less than 1 degree centigrade rise off the tooth surface we can then pick up with very sensitive detectors. Now, how can you figure out where you are? Well, we flicker our lights. When the light is off, you can then see what happens to that bit of energy you've dropped into the tooth surface. If you're flickering it very quickly, the light only has a chance, or the laser energy has only a chance, to drop down to just below the surface of the tooth. If you flicker it slowly, the energy has a chance to drive itself down about 5 millimeters below the enamel surface, and you can then see what happens as the light or the energy comes back out. So there are other devices on the market where laser light is always kept on. It's not pulsed.
Mm-hmm.
You never have a chance to see what actually goes on when that laser light or that energy is dropped into the tooth. You're just seeing a glow. But here, by flickering it, you both see the change in the glow, and you also see the heat that comes back. And that allows us then to pick up very small defects and to monitor the growth of those areas of tooth decay or fractures or cracks on all sorts of surfaces of the tooth.
How sensitive and specific is this test? How well, if this test comes back and shows you that there is a defect, is there a margin of error in that measurement?
We did one of the first papers we looked at in terms of sensitivity and specificity, how specific it is, was a paper we published in a journal called Carey's Research in 2004, and here we were looking at tooth decay on the biting surfaces of back teeth. And I don't have the paper in front of me, but if my memory serves me correct, that visual examination and radiographs were about 30 to 40% sensitive, which meant that 80% of the time, 70 to 60% of the time, they missed tooth decay. We looked at other laser-based systems, and there we were getting a sensitivity of approximately 60% on when the lesion was just partway through enamel. And when we looked at using the Canary's basic technology, we were looking at 80 to 82% sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, we haven't done that sensitivity analysis on other areas of tooth surface, but what we've then gone on to do in our research and our publications is to look at how early on we can detect tooth decay. And we would create it using a variety of different accepted artificial means of creating these lesions and then be able to monitor their growth.
So the question then is, with this device and being able to detect early changes, how will this affect treatment? Does this change the approach to how decay is treated?
Definitely, because your treatment endpoints now shift. If you can now find decay earlier, then you then can use other methods for treating it. The classical way for treating tooth decay is to wait for the tooth decay to break all the way through the enamel shell of the tooth, and then one places a filling, a white filling, a silver filling, or whatever that you want to be, whatever materials you want to be using. If it's partway through the enamel shell, the typical recommendations that we would make, for example, in our clinic, is that these are areas you need to watch, you need to brush, but there hasn't been a sort of off-the-shelf type of technique that one can use to remineralize these lesions, because there aren't sensitive enough techniques to actually show that these lesions or these areas of tooth decay remineralize. With this technology coming onto market, it allows companies who are developing new ways of remineralization or healing the crystal to actually design and run clinical trials to show that their agents do work. And there are some really interesting ones out there. There's a new one called CCP-ACP, which is really a milk-based protein, and it's a calcium-binding protein. And what happens is it's applied onto the tooth surface, and it'll bind on free-floating calcium and phosphate found in saliva. So it brings it right to the tooth itself, or right to the enamel shell, and will allow it to crystallize. But again, they're having troubles in their clinical trials showing this because they don't have any in vivo technique for showing this actually happening. So our technology will be able to help them do these sorts of clinical trials. There's also a product called xylitol, which is found in some chewing gums. It's a sugar-based alcohol that will also stimulate remineralization. And obviously, there's the classic one that dentists have been using for many years, which is fluoride in a number of different formulations, either topically, like the fluoride trays you have, your children have at their regular checkups, to fluoride varnishes that are applied onto the tooth surface. And these also stimulate or provide the appropriate chemical makeup to allow remineralization.
So in conclusion, I want to ask you, where can listeners get more information about this technology? And also, as you mentioned, some of the advantages that it will provide with ongoing research to developing new treatments to prevent the degradation of teeth before it becomes a situation where more major invasive type procedures have to be done.
The company itself has a website which has a listing of all of our publications and the like, too, so that's one way to follow it, which is at the www.thecanarysystem.com. But that's only looking at what our technology can do. In terms of looking at other websites where one can get information on tooth decay and the like, you could look at Medline or PubMed. The American Dental Association has a very good website that talks about tooth decay, diet, and prevention. The Ontario Dental Association has a very good website, and so does the Canadian Dental Association. As a matter of fact, I think Nova Scotia has an interesting one as well, too. And there you can get a lot of information about what is tooth decay, how one can set up a situation where one can get these teeth to remineralize. So those are, BC has one, and the California Dental Association, their foundation, has some really, really good information if you want to look at some good analysis of the literature. So I think it's www.cdafoundation.org. And there's a group of publications that have been produced by some noted researchers on this whole concept of early intervention, risk analysis, and what is the mechanics behind it.
Dr. Stephen Abrams is dental clinician in practice for 29 years and chief executive officer of Quantum Dental Technologies. And Dr. Abrams, I'd like to thank you very much for an absolutely fascinating review of the pathophysiology of tooth decay and the technologies that are coming online to help detect the condition early, leading to newer, more advanced treatments, reducing invasive treatments, and preserving the dentition in a person's mouth. And I really appreciate the time you've taken with us today.
Thank you very much. It's one of my favorite topics.
You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.